Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is a Thursday afternoon, the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Just about every other Thursday, Dennis Rodkins comes by. He writes about real estate for Crane Chicago Business. You can read his stories at chicagobusiness.com. And this is one of those Thursdays. Dennis, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Hi. I'm so excited about, well, a couple of these stories that we're going to talk about. But the one is, I think everyone in their neighborhood has a house that they just don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, how can they have done that to their house? Well, it's happening up in the north side or northwest side of Chicago in a way, in the bungalow belt.
Right.
But bungalows are different because they have some historic value, but there's a guy who's putting a second story on bungalows
right.
in a way that has the purest, absolutely furious. Tell me about that.
Furious would be the word. So he's not the only person to be putting second stories on bungalows, and he's not the only person to do it this way, but he's done quite a bit of them, and he's attracted some attention in part because he started a social media campaign about what he's doing, and so
trying to build his business.
Yeah. So what this man does is, so the classic bungalow has a very sloped second story, sloped roof over the second story. What he does is scrape off the second floor and put something that is more, without putting any judgment on the term, I'll say boxy,
right.
more rectilinear, and some people have described it as a mobile home dropped on top, those kinds of things. But really what he's doing is he's maximizing the square footage. He says that one of the main reasons to do this is one of the things a bungalow is missing is what everybody wants now, a master suite with an attached master bath. And to get the amount of square footage that he needs, that's one of the things he has to do, is make this more rectangular. Other developers say, no, I can get a master suite on the second floor without changing the roof line.
Okay, but why is Mrs. Kravitz worried about what her neighbor is doing here?
Well, because
there is a legitimate reason,
yeah,
too.
Yes, there is. The Historic Bungalow Association, which is out there to promote, preserve, protect, and help people expand and modernize bungalows, is not happy with what he does, because one of the hallmarks of the bungalow belt is that you would see a dozen running down the block.
Like just a sweep of homes looking
yeah,
the same.
You know, right. And it's, if you were to film a TV show set in Chicago in the 50s, if you were to do an All in the Family type thing, you know, with the streetscape running down, it would be in the bungalow belt, because that really is what our housing looked like in the 40s, 50s. And so when this guy comes along and interferes with that streetscape, the feeling is among this group, fans of this group, the Historic Bungalow Association, that you're changing the historic character of the street.
Right. And, you know, and I see that. But I think if you buy a house, you should be able to put a trailer on top.
If you want, yeah. And that's what you're planning to do at your house, isn't
it? You know
it?
What? Look at this. I didn't realize this until we talked, but I think I might live in one of those houses. I have a house.
Oh, I need to come look.
I'll take a picture of it. And it might have been considered a bungalow, and someone added on before we bought it. They made it look Tudor-y in the front, but then it goes steeply up, and it's a boxcar.
Well, there
and
you
it's
go.
It's a boxcar all the way back.
This has been happening not only to bungalows, but almost any other modest-sized 20th century home style for years.
Right.
Everybody does it. Some people do it with a real eye toward the aesthetics, and some people do it in a more, let's say, pragmatic way, thinking about square footage and materials. One of the reasons people are concerned about this man's homes is that it does look like two separate stories of a house, because generally the original is brick, and what he puts on the second floor has siding.
Tyvek.
So it looks like two different things.
Right.
But, you know, I spoke to, you read the story, I spoke to the buyer of one that people hold up as especially bad, and she said, I like the way my house looks. It looks like it has both old and new. And, you know, for some people's aesthetics, it's great. They may not be quite as attuned to the sort of historical character of the bungalow, but do you have to be?
I take people to Europe. We look at the palaces that are part medieval, part, you know, Renaissance, right? There we go. That's what it is.
Good segue, Steve. That definitely covers it.
Sort of. We don't have a lot of time, but I want to talk about also this. I want to talk about the book that highlights Arlington Heights and Evanston as a way for future development for the suburbs, because I think this makes perfect sense.
It does, you know, and it fits with that bungalow story, because it has to do with the evolution of the way we live. There's a an architecture professor at the University of, at UIC, who has written a book called The New Suburbanism. And the big models he holds up are suburban Washington, D.C. and Toronto. But here in Chicago, the two places he singles out as really being what suburbs ought to try to be now is Evanston and Arlington Heights, because they have built tall buildings near train stations. When you pair tall residential, primarily tall buildings and train stations, you create, he says, a mini downtown, mm-hmm. right? You make it possible for people to get around without cars. And he and I had a very funny conversation about how much he hates traffic. It was kind of like, which one of us hates traffic more? And, you know, when people can get around by trains, they aren't using a car as much, and they also may not be making a car payment, which makes living a little more affordable. And they've got this nice, pleasant feeling that you get when you walk around downtown here in downtown Chicago, but on a smaller scale.
Right. So they've got the restaurants and the stores and the cleaners and all of right. that right outside their apartment door. It's like a little city pod, but not so much that it overtakes the... I love Arlington Heights.
City pod is a great description. Yeah, Arlington Heights has done a great job. Evanston, the two of them, over the course of about 20 years, raised their heights, right? We think of a suburb as not more than maybe four stories high. They've gone up. I think Arlington Heights' tallest is about 15, and I think in Evanston it might be just a little taller than that. If you put them in the downtown and you have sort of a stair-step effect, it's not two-story houses next to 15-story right. buildings. It serves a lot of purposes. We've described some, but one is it intensifies development where we're already developed and we're not pushing farther out into the cornfields.
It also, I think, brings people who don't live there into there.
Oh, yeah.
For the shops and the restaurants and the ambiance of that. We had some of the leaders from LaGrange on not too long ago, and they're building a big apartment building.
Yeah.
Right near the train, and their idea is that millennials want to live in apartment buildings, and that's how they're going to attract them and their money to the suburb.
Exactly. Yeah, LaGrange is a great example for exactly what you're describing. And part of that is, you know, you and I have talked about this, all this job growth downtown, and it's not in the suburbs. Well, if I can live in a suburban setting, let's say I have personal ties to Arlington Heights, or for some reason I don't want to live downtown, but I work downtown, if I can get back and forth by train and I can be answering emails the whole way rather than just swearing at other drivers,
right.
you know.
Or I'm having other drivers swear at you, Dennis. I've seen you drive.
That was you.
That was me, yeah.
I can live in downtown Arlington Heights, work in downtown Chicago, and not feel quite so isolated.
It's the wave of the future. Dennis Rodkin, thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
Read Dennis's stories at chicagobusiness.com. This is The Business Lunch. It's 12:23. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGNR. The text line lit up with comments about that story that I was talking to Dennis Rodkin about, the guy who's putting a second story addition, on bungalows. I just posted it on my Facebook page at Steve Bertrand, or on Twitter at Steve Bertrand as well. Read the story. Look at the pictures. I'd love to know what you think. Ian Scher is on a phone line. He writes for CNET and joins us from time to time. Ian, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Okay, we've got so much to talk about. I'm not sure where to start, but I'm going to throw you a bit of a curve. When the campaign started this year, everyone said it was going to be the campaign of Periscope and Meerkat, that we were going to see the candidates everywhere. I don't know if that's happened, but a remarkable thing happened on Capitol Hill yesterday with this new social media Periscope. I mean, I'm sure you're aware of it, what they did at the floor of the House.
Yes, it was really fascinating, and part of all what drove this, right? The Democrats wanted to take control of the floor, and they did that. And when it happened, the cameras were shut off, and there was no way to turn them back on without the approval of the Speaker of the House.
He wasn't going to give it.
He's a Republican,
right?
And so what happened was that a number of the Democrats decided, okay, they whipped out their phones and they started using the streaming software from Facebook and Twitter called Periscope and Facebook Live. And it went bananas. Like, you had C-SPAN, whose job ostensibly is to relay what's happening in government to us. They started picking up those broadcasts and rebroadcasting them. You saw a bunch of people posting to them. I think three or four different congresspeople at any given time were live streaming from their phones. And of course, it caused all this other consternation because, you know, you're not supposed to use your phone. I used to give tours when I was a intern on the Capitol. I remember you're not supposed to take pictures or to do any video or anything when you're in outside the chambers. And so there's been all this kind of very interesting stuff going on where the questions of democratizing information, making it easy for us to access it, at the same time of a decorum and all these other debates that's going on. It's really fascinating watching it, and it's all being driven by these phones and the software.
Yeah, and so, it really struck me as, I don't want to make too much of it, but like an Arab Spring sort of thing, or these things that happen overseas where we don't have access to news events other than through social media. That was happening on the floor of the House last night, and it was riveting. All right, so there's that. I think I'm going to talk about the marketing aspect of that a little bit later. We just have a minute or so left. Tell me about, we talk a lot about the need to increase diversity in Silicon Valley and in VC firms and things like that. How are we doing there?
Well, we're not doing too well. It's still a pretty big problem. If you look at the data, Silicon Valley has not been able to fix its whiteness and male problem, right? It's still overwhelmingly run by white men, and the workforces are that. And so what's interesting is that there's actually stats out there that show that it's even getting worse. At Microsoft, their diversity's actually dropped, even though they've been trying to make it better. And you have about 20% of computer science grads are black or Latino. Only 5% of them are hired into Silicon Valley. So there is some sort of a problem going on. So one of the ideas that's popped up recently is this thing called Code 2040, which is a nonprofit that's been supported by Google and other people to actually help minorities get internships in Silicon Valley. And they're not just getting coffee for people. Like, they're doing real work.
Right.
And the idea is that by getting them a foot in the door, they're going to be able to actually get jobs and help make this better. It's not the only idea, but it's a really interesting one.
And the idea, the fact is that the more voices, the different voices you have, or eyes, or experiences, the more productive your business is. I mean, it's been proven over and over. So
yeah, there's so much data that shows that diversity, both in terms of gender and in terms of ethnicity, makes huge differences for companies. It's economic arguments. They make more money because they are able to better understand their customers, and they have better workplaces. Just all of it shows that it's a better environment. And it's fascinating that Silicon Valley, which calls itself a meritocracy, where the best rises to the top, can't get over this one problem.
All right, we've got a minute left, less than that, really. Tell me why Mark Zuckerberg is blocking the camera on his laptop.
We don't know, but it's fascinating. There was a photo that he took inside his office that showed that his laptop had a little tape over his camera. And, of course, a lot of people do this, especially after Edward Snowden, the NSA contractor,
right. Well, we thought those were the paranoid people.
Yeah, now it turns out the tinfoil hats are really real. And so Mark Zuckerberg, of course, is one of the most powerful and richest men in the world. And so it's very interesting to see that he is following this type of idea as well. And it's just a further indication that, you know, as much as we think that we're able to kind of have safety in our homes and all of this stuff, there's really a question out there about whether we can actually trust all of our devices, that once an idea or thought or images leave our heads, that they can be still private somehow. And clearly Mark Zuckerberg does not trust his own laptop enough to leave the camera open all the time.
Ian Scherer, nice to talk to you again. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
You can read more from Ian at CNET.com. Thank you, Kim Gordon. It's 12:37 now, Thursday afternoon. Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much for listening. I'm glad you do. Hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand, or on Facebook at Steve Bertrand as well. Let me tell you, I don't have the information in front of me now. Elise Glink is in the studio. Elise, welcome.
Hey.
This is terrible marketing, but I wanted to mention while we had a chance, because, you know, I'm leading a trip to Prague and Vienna next week, and then we have a trip to Ireland in October, and the trip sold out in record time. It was like 3 weeks gone. So we've added a second trip that leaves on next April 19th. Very similar. It's 9 days. It's just under $3,000. And I think we're not going to really get into formal advertising for it, because just by word of mouth, it's halfway filled now.
Well, you probably had a waiting list
from
the last one.
I had a waiting list, exactly. And anyway, the point is, if you're interested in it, the information's up at WGNradio.com, and you can reserve a spot for next April if you'd like, or just check it out. It's also at SteveBertrandTravel.com.
April's a nice time to be in Ireland. I've been there then.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you can call me, 847-606-6065, and I'll give you the information. But it's a GN trip. It's just going to go under the radar a little bit, I think.
Yeah, right. Not after this conversation.
Well, I don't know. It's amazing. In fact, we think, Michael Heidemann, look at me. Do we know about Rick Steves yet? Or Okay, we're trying.
Rick Steves?
We're working on it.
The famous Rick Steves?
Yeah, we're working on it because I'm interested in European travel. My daughter's in Amsterdam today.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Ireland has been red hot. And some people say the continent has dropped off a bit, and I'm sure it's about worry and fear. But anyway, Ireland.
There's nothing like an island to make you feel safe. Wait, Brexit.
Brexit, I don't know. Anyway, it seems, though, that it's picked up. So anyway, it's been very hot, and I just heard Rick Steves is confirmed. So we'll talk to Rick Steves tomorrow about traveling to Europe and about how all of the news. There was another scare in Germany today.
Very, very scary stuff.
So if you want to go to Ireland with me, go to WGNradio.com and I'll get you the information. That is not why you are here.
Oh, I don't know. I love talking about Ireland. I'm an Anglophile.
Are you?
I'm like, you know, the whole British Isle thing is
I
big for me.
I kind of am, too. I watch too much BBC. It's weird.
Right.
I do. The dramas.
Steve Bertrand.
So I missed this story yesterday. In fact, some people were emailing me kind of on me because I didn't give it the importance that I should have early on. The House sit-in about the gun bill.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. This kind of came out of nowhere. I found myself, as I was watching the Soldier Field get completely flooded.
I was watching that too, yeah.
My husband Sam and my son Michael were there, and so I was texting them back and forth because we were getting...
Did your Spanish improve?
My Spanish did improve. Actually, yeah. We were watching Univision, so in Spanish, which I was trying to have my other son, Alex, translate for me. Anyway, another story. But the when that finally ended late last night, around 11:20, I flipped over to MSNBC, and I thought, oh, my gosh, they're still sitting there.
Right.
I couldn't believe it. And it really is sort of remarkable what's happened. It almost felt like, wait, we're watching our government in action. They're doing something.
They did something by shutting down the House, which has done nothing.
Right.
So what I want to talk to you about, though, is the method of the message, because it apparently was very secret. A lot of Democrats didn't know about it. Reporters didn't know. They just sort of, you know, pulled it out of their hat in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly it was planned. But also the way they use social media to get their message out. It seems to be like textbook case.
It is. This was an interesting, if you look at the optics of it, there is such a groundswell of anger over this gun issue. Leveraging it makes all the sense in the world. But there was a time last night, as it was like 12:15 when I finally shut it off, where I thought, are we actually in an episode of Scandal? it felt like an episode of Scandal from Season 5, where the ex-first lady, who's now the senator, ends up standing up in front of the Senate for 15 hours. I think that there's, you know, when you look at the optics of it, the fact that they use social media, I thought was really well done and smart, but I felt like there could have been an even broader push to sort of leverage it up. Like, it was so last minute, they didn't really think it through.
So the House cameras that you see on C-SPAN and elsewhere are controlled by the Speaker of the House.
Yeah, and he shut them off.
Well, he did, but in his defense, when the House isn't in session, they shut them down. So that's just kind of the rule. It just turned out to be very convenient. Mm-hmm. So when the cameras were off, this was still going on. There was no way to see it other than these members of Congress and others who live streamed it from their cell phones.
So they used two things. They used Periscope for part of it, and they used Facebook Live.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what I thought was so interesting, aside from being great ads for both of those apps. This is an usually when you think of people over the age of, say, 50, 55, which most members of Congress are, you always think of them as not being able to use this. So
right.
I think what probably happened is their junior staff members, right, who are all, you know, young, were like, yeah, we can do this with Facebook Live. It was such a perfect use of those mediums, and it's exactly what both Periscope and Facebook Live are trying to do, which is make news more accessible
right.
to a very wide audience and population. And because of the power of those apps, I think that's really how the word started to get out.
Oh, I think so, too. And it really was, I think, one of those moments, not that it's going to be written about in history books, but in a way it was an historic moment. I mean, I called my son up. I'm like, look at this, you know. And you had, it was unscripted in many ways. You had John, the Congressman Lewis, walk out, talk to the crowd, and there were people gathering, I think they were tourists, outside the Capitol, cheering him on and booing other members of Congress. I mean, it just was a real event in a town where there are so few real events anymore.
Yeah, it definitely felt very authentic. It also felt like they could have leveraged it up a little bit more. So had I been sitting there with them, what I might have said
to them is, here's the difference. I'm just loving this organic seat of your pants sort of thing. And the marketer over there saying,
news reporter that you're primary, you are. This shows you that I'm so not a journalist anymore. But I was thinking to myself, wow, you could have taken a quick $500 and layered it on top of Twitter and Facebook to push out the message globally. So maybe it would have been $5,000 instead of $500. I don't know what it would have taken. But you could have pushed that out so that everybody would have caught the live stream. Because you know that Facebook has a billion users that are live.
So they would have essentially bought time or bought ad space to put it on everyone's feed at one
exactly.
time.
Exactly. So it would have taken, you couldn't take that and then put it on, say, NBC and bought time. That process takes too long. But instantaneously, you can now buy ads on Facebook, on Twitter, with Periscope, and get that message out to a much broader audience that you would ever be able to reach. And you leverage it up by millions, millions and millions. And so that would have been really interesting to do.
Well, it seems to have an impact. You know, there's an effort toward a compromise bill in the Senate. And as we were talking, I just got an alert from Politico that the Senate is going to take up that, I think it's Susan Collins' bill.
Nice.
Maybe tomorrow they're going to vote on it. So
I'd really like to see something happen, not for anything other than nothing's really happened all year. And here you have a situation where there's such a groundswell, and every time you have another one of these mass shootings, hello Germany, right?
Yeah.
Both sides are trying to play it against the middle, like, well, see, they've got gun laws and look what happened, and you know, we don't and look what happened. But you've got to be able to sit down and talk to people.
It's nice to see that there's something fresh happening. Aside from whether it's guns or not, that there seems to be some sort of national momentum with this sit-in and the pressure from that to see what's going to happen.
Do you think we're going to have a new rule right when they come back on January 5th? I would lay odds on this. There's going to be a new rule, no Facebook Live and no Periscope and no using your phones in the Senate.
We'll see. Let's see if they come down on anyone. Elise Glink. Well, we kind of threw you a curveball there, but it was nice to talk to you about that. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Happy to do it.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WG. Thank you very much, Orion. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, the music of Fish, and why not? Zizou is here, and Jim Pollock as well, a couple of artists, and welcome to the Business Lunch, guys. I appreciate this.
Thanks for having us.
And so you've both done, is it called gig art? We used to call it, you know, concert posters. Is gig art? What's the term, Zizou?
Gig posters. Screen prints, yeah, I mean.
And you've both done it for Fish and many others as well, right?
Yeah.
Tell me, Zizou, I want to start with you, and I want to talk about Michael Heidemann ran into you at Austin, right? South by Southwest.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're up here, you're doing your posters, and you're down there selling them. How much of what you do is art and how much of what you do is business?
It's a split. Things like South by Southwest and Flatstock are predominantly business. We go down, it's a big convention, we go down there to sell posters. And it has to be predominantly gig posters,
right?
Music posters.
How do you build a reputation in this business?
For me, it's been word of mouth, handshake agreements, just kind of, you know.
But I mean, when you've got Iggy Pop or someone like that, you know, and you want to do work for them, do you do spec work or do they come to you?
No, it's a little bit of both. Sometimes, you know, management companies will hear of you and the word travels, or, you reach out and get lucky.
Right.
Or somebody sees something they really like, such as at, you know, Flatstock or Austin or in Chicago at Pitchfork.
So when you go to those shows, are you going to sell individual screened prints or are you trying to sort of drum up bigger business down the road?
A little bit of both. Yeah. I mean, you want to sell the units, but then you're also, you know, interested in making connections such as this, for instance. That's
right.
Why I'm here tonight.
Tell me about Avenue F. Gallery F. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. So Gallery F is a screen printing, street art, graffiti, pretty much anything, fine art based gallery retail space in Logan Square. We're almost 4 years old. We will be in July. And it was started by me and Billy Craven. And it basically grew out of my business, Fug Screens, in Wicker Park, which is predominantly gig posters
right.
and art prints.
And that's why we have the guy sitting between us in the studio, Jim Pollock.
Absolutely.
Introduce him for me.
Here's Jim. He's the grandfather of fish prints, basically.
Yeah. Is that? Did you want to go by that, Jim?
You know, grandfather. Sure. I have a lot of gray hair over here.
Yeah.
I've been doing stuff for the band Fish a long time. I went to school with them in Vermont. In terms of I was with you guys talking about like how trying to drum up business at the same time you're selling art. I think that's the story of every artist. And then, like, basically, I go to rock shows. Sometimes I run into other managers of bands. We get to talking. I get a gig lined up for that. It's kind of fun to be able to go enjoy some music and actually set up some business things in the future.
There is a retrospective at Gallery F, Jim's work, and that's why you're in town as well. Do you like the business part of it?
I do.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I mean,
so, I mean,
like,
you know, I think the stereotype would be this artist, right, who just loves going out to try to sell.
Right. I mean, like, no, I mean, I think this particular business, gig posters, allows, there's a lot of different art forms, but allows a lot of creativity for an artist who wants to do design work. I, in particular, do linoleum print, relief prints, and I hand print them often, unless the run is too big, and then sometimes I'll go to a local shop in Chicago called Roner Letterpress, and they'll run it for me right off of my hand-cut plates. I've been doing like this 19th century style since about 2000. I did about 10 years of merchandise with Fish that was more hand-drawn stuff for t-shirts, newsletters, other earlier posters. I moved to Chicago after I had met those guys in Vermont. They were from, we all went to a college called Goddard College,
yeah.
which is in the middle of the state, old hippie college. Then I came here and finished at the Art Institute. Those guys used to come through town, crash on my floor when they played bars. And then, lo and behold,
Here we are. Zizou, I want to run a quote by you from an interview I saw. You say, there are a lot of prints that I love, and there are lots of prints that I don't have any emotional connection to but are huge landmarks in my career. And that strikes me because, you know, we think of artists as loving what they work, but we keep getting back to the business of it, too. Tell me about the line between loving what you're doing and doing something for a check.
This would, unfortunately, be a very good example of that.
Yeah.
I have no connection to Fish.
I don't want to read the rest of the quote,
sure.
but you brought up the Fish
yeah.
work you've done.
And it's a landmark. You know, Fish are the band to do posters for in the gig poster industry. And they've created that, and they do it extremely well. So everybody wants to do Fish prints. But it's just not, I love music, and that's why I'm, you know, a big part of why I'm in this industry. But the jam band scene is just not my thing.
Yeah. How about you, Jim?
Oh, I love music.
Yeah. But do you have works that you've done that you're like, I'm just doing this?
No, or, you know, you can't. You almost can't. I mean, there's so much. It's a labor of love. I mean, like, there's a long process to it. You got to, like, design it. You got to carve a few blocks. You got to put it in. I'm printing on a 1955 printing press called a Vandercook. I've never used electric presses for most of my work. It's all hand pressed. I sign and number it. Everyone knows how big the run size is, so all the collectors, you know, I just like try to keep everyone happy. And like, and Fish and their fans have just been amazing. I mean, just like, yeah, their love of poster art, they're always feeding my ego or whatever. No, they're very complimentary. It's just been an amazing ride. These 30 years you look up sometimes from your work and you get to appreciate a lot of stuff that you've done.
Well, we do too. Zizou and Jim Pollock, I appreciate you coming by.
Thank you so much.
The show is at Gallery F. Mitch, tell me about Gallery, where people can find it and get more information.
You can go to galleryf.com. We are on Fullerton in Milwaukee. At 2381 North Milwaukee Avenue. And we're open every day except Mondays, 11 to 6.
Or find Jim at Wrigley Field this weekend.
Absolutely. Get your dancing shoes on.
Thanks for coming in, guys. I appreciate it.
Appreciate having us.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.